Okay, next case for argument, Schuster versus Lucent Technologies, Mr. Fox. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Fox, and I represent Paul Schuster, who was a founder of a software venture called Visual Insights, and described just prior to his termination by his immediate supervisor as a critical component for the success of that venture. I'd like to focus on what I believe is key here with regard to the analysis visited upon this case by the trial court. I think pretextuality is at the heart of this case. I think that the comments and the statistics, or just the fact with regard to who was terminated along with Mr. Schuster, are enlightened and informed by the proof of pretextuality. What the court appeared not to do at the trial level was identify the specific reasons proffered by the employer for selecting Schuster, when they were proffered, and how they changed over time. We've shown in our brief that the reasons proffered were something of a movable feast, that there were approximately three versions of reasons given by the defendant for terminating Schuster, and that as the first set began to deteriorate through discovery, it was elaborated into a second set, which began to deteriorate, which was elaborated into a third set. And the evidence with regard to those sets of reasons showed that young people were favored, and Paul Schuster, one of the oldest employees, along with the two others who were terminated when he was, were disfavored. Particularly, the defendants glossed over the fact that the initial reason they proffered with regard to Schuster's termination was that his job was eliminated and his functions were eliminated in the area of product development.
You lay great stress on this, but it does seem to me that the record shows that they were shrinking in size, that they thought they needed a leaner workforce to move into this spin-off into independence. And I found it hard to be too shocked at the thought that some of the functions of somebody who leaves are then picked up by other people, even if they may have made a slightly overbroad statement in an interrogatory. There's no dispute that they didn't go out and hire a brand new replacement for him right away. That's the usual pretext argument in a RIF case.
Well, but they did inferentially replace him in accordance with a plan that was announced prior to the RIF itself. On page 10 of our brief, we cite the statement made by Cogswell, who was the person responsible, or the key person responsible for this RIF, who before there was any FMP or force management evaluation, said as follows: I'm going to move somebody else into Schuster's place. I'm going to form a new development team under the four 40-year-olds he mentioned.
Right,
most of that came to fruition.
It may have, but it was a smaller number of people. They were trying to get down to 30, weren't they, give or take? And so eliminating middle layer, you know, or high layers of management, or even presidents or whatever, could be a way to do that. And if that's what the record shows they did, the fact that he combines this research and development under a new team consisting of these people, Mr. Ike and Mr. Hammond and others, doesn't mean that they weren't trying to change the structure of this soon-to-be company.
It doesn't necessarily mean that. But a reasonable inference can be drawn from the fact that immediately after Schuster left, Mr. Hammond was promoted to be the executive director of product development. Mr. Hammond was brought over from marketing. When they talked about this plan that was going to reduce their workforce, they were going to identify the redundant functions. It is implicit by the fact that he was brought over from marketing that his job in marketing was in fact redundant. And he was brought over to take the job in development, and he was 40 years old. What also informs that situation a little bit more, such that a jury could reasonably infer age discrimination, is despite the talk about reduction in force, despite the talk about the burn rate, one of the people that they indicated was part of the rift, Susan Birkwald was encouraged to stay and was told she would get a new job in this enterprise. Now, if they are looking to reduce the force to numbers, as you suggest, Judge Wood, and I don't dispute that as a general notion, then why would they be telling this person, who then they proffer as an example of a younger person they terminate, and we find through discovery that she was offered a job, thereby not decreasing their burn rate, but increasing it by creating a new position. So I think that as you move through these the variations, when they start out by saying to us, the functions were totally eliminated. That was their very statement sworn in an interrogatory. Now that may be a mistake. It was a repetition of what they had said a year before to the EEOC. It was something that they knew was not a complete and truthful representation, as evidenced by their supplementation of interrogatories to say, oh, well, we've gone through all this discovery, and we have now understood that his functions are reassigned.
Did you think they were actually trying to reduce the size of the staff?
Well, there's a question at that juncture because of this plan that was already implemented as to whether they were and how much they needed to. They had $10 million worth of funding when Schuster was terminated. They were going to get $25 million worth of funding.
I don't know how much, but do you think they were going to reduce the number of employees?
Well, they were going to reduce the number of employees.
So if they hadn't been discriminating, who would they have let go rather than Schuster?
If they hadn't been discriminating, Hammond would be one example. If they hadn't been...
Not Ike. You're not suggesting he would have.
Well,
they're
representing that Ike is a patent holder and indispensable, which goes... Let me suggest, Judge, that goes against the very notion that he was up for competition ever against Schuster. By one representation, they said he was not somebody who could even be considered.
So you're saying he's the wrong comparable, but Hammond is the correct one?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they're representing to this court that he never was in competition with anybody. He was the main guy, the developer of the software. Now, I don't know whether that's true. It may be more intricate than that. But he was the wrong comparable, clearly. And that comparability, and the fact that he was the wrong comparable, is further informed by that quote that I made. As they move forward, Hammond gets reassigned more and more of the development duties. He is clearly the person who's titled in Schuster's position.
And are you saying he didn't have a marketing function? Or?
From what was stated by the defendants after he moved into the executive director of
development. So what do? They take a guy from marketing because he's young and they give him a job with different responsibilities?
That's what they said they did. And they said it in the supplemental answers to the interrogatories. They said that he became the person chiefly in charge of development. So
what happened to his position in marketing?
There's no evidence of record as to where it went. There's no evidence that it
went. So you're saying he doesn't do any marketing for this new entity?
He doesn't do any, at least as far as the record is concerned, he does not do marketing as an executive director of development other than as, to the same extent, it was an ancillary function of Schuster's job. So if, in fact, a jury can reasonably infer that flat representation initially given was untrue and not excusable as the defendants attempt to excuse it by saying it was either an inept investigator at Lucent. They tried to excuse it by saying, oh, you have to understand the companies were transitioning and we couldn't get the true reasons. We had to discover themselves as plaintiffs did. If that is in fact not credible, I think a reasonable inference arises that Paul Schuster was disadvantaged and planned to be disadvantaged back when they met with human resources and said, Schuster is out, we're moving somebody in his position. It is against that background as they move through the reasons. They finally come to the last reasons. And Judge Wood, I think this also again informs this movable feast of reasons.
Your basic argument is we should say there's a jury issue on the ultimate question of discrimination because you have enough to show that the proffered reasons are pretextual, from the fact that they first say it's functions and then they say it's, you know, shrinking, and then they actually say he was a bad performer, they change.
That's exactly correct. And the fact is that the evidence when the bad performance came up, and it came up as something that was integrated as a result of the deposition of Cogswell, who was at all times available to the lawyers and the people who represented the company to see what he felt and why he did what he did. He was the key person to question, and there are certain usual questions you would ask in order to make truthful representations regarding his decision. They either weren't asked or he gave false answers. He then came up with a performance reason, and we showed that this was an outstanding performer. Mr. Schuster was an outstanding performer in development. We showed that for example, Ike, and he may have been indispensable, he wasn't even in development, but we also showed that he was rated as an outstanding performer by Weichel, and with the confession, originally at least, of Cogswell. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Okay. You've run over your time. Mr. Jackson?
May it please the court, counsel. Steve Ike was chosen because he was the inventor of this technology.
What if he's the wrong person to look at? I don't think anybody's arguing that you shouldn't have kept Steve Ike.
Your Honor, they were taking costs out of the business. They had had a prior FMP of forced.
No, we all understand that that's what all riffs are about. But if you're going to give us a long talk about Steve Ike and nobody disagrees that he's one of the people who should have been retained.
Actually, the plaintiffs disagree.
Not very. No, I didn't miss. Mr. Fox just now said it was Hammond.
His brief went on at length, Your Honor, with all respect. His opening brief went on at length about how
right.
We were wrong.
He's backed away from that now, so he substituted Hammond for Ike.
The answer is, Your Honor, they were trimming out higher-level management with more
cost. And
why more
did they, in fact, begin with Mr. Cogswell himself, or at least contemporaneous evidence from Mr. Cogswell indicating that Schuster was a very fine performer, and then in this last round of things, Mr. Cogswell coming up with all kinds of negative statements about him that you would have expected would have been the first things out of his mouth to say, you know, of course in a riff you have to get rid of people that you might not otherwise wanted to have let go, but you find the ones that are at the bottom of the heap and peel them off. I would have expected to see those statements from Cogswell immediately.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I think that this whole suggestion that the plaintiff has made, that these reasons are inconsistent, I think is incorrect.
But it is a little inconsistent if you say, we got rid of Schuster because we're slimming down, you know, either A, we're eliminating his functions, or B, I'm willing to say, you know, folding in those which we need to keep into the functions of other people. That's different from saying, this guy creates morale problems, this guy isn't performing, his team isn't doing the job. Quite different statement.
Actually, Your Honor, if I could go back to how the context of it came up. They did a report called the business condition. They looked at the business and they decided, who do we need on a going forward basis? They decided that a process person like Mr. Schuster was not somebody they needed in their shrinking world. Then, during the course of this litigation, during examination and depositions and the like, the questioning came out of Cogswell of his views of Schuster. And Cogswell did not have as high an opinion of Schuster as Mr. Weichel did.
But there was
you have to think like 25-year-olds. That was it.
That was not Cogswell. That was a guy named Tattleman who did not make the decision. He was in the unit. He did not make the decision. In fact, Tattleman and Weichel, who was Schuster's big backer, had a debate about the necessity of Schuster's function, not his age.
But the thing that troubles me, though, is that there is contemporaneous evidence that Cogswell himself, who we all agree is the decision maker, whatever input he may have received from others, had a high opinion of Mr. Schuster, and then there's this later statement from Cogswell himself again that he didn't. Now, the explanation you offer may indeed be the explanation, but that's the kind of evidence that a jury might say, well, maybe there's a different explanation, he's trying to cover his tracks.
I guess, Your Honor, I disagree with that because
contextual.
I think it's a question of degree. I don't think Mr. Cogswell ever backed off from what was written in the business condition, but he was probed by counsel during a deposition about what he thought of Schuster, and he came and Cogswell did not say everything that was entirely flattering about Schuster. So
not then, but it was earlier that he was saying flattering things, writing them down.
He was, and he was a fine process person. But at this point in the business venture's history, they did not need another process person.
But fine process people don't fail to complete assignments and cause morale problems. Unless Lucent has a really unusual idea of what good performance is.
I'll take a pass on that last comment,
okay.
Your Honor. My point is this, that I don't think the comments are so inconsistent that would raise an inference of age discrimination. They'd identified him for elimination because they had a new business that was going forward. And during the course of the deposition...
Well, what about... Now, your opponent laid a lot of stress on the fact that Hammond was a marketing person who was given Schuster's job, showing that they did need a process person, and the only reason for putting Hammond in was that he was young. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple reasons for Hammond. First of all, Ike is in charge of the development function. He gets the top part of it. There are two other developers who are let go. So Hammond does have something to do when he's brought on. There are additional duties. Schuster's duties are parceled out to various people.
So you're saying Hammond's job was not identical to Schuster?
It was not identical because Ike had the top leader
well,
function
of development.
Did Hammond
use any of his marketing experience in his new job?
Your Honor, I don't know if there's something in the record on that, so I can't comment on that.
What did Hammond have an engineering background?
That's not in the record. My assumption is he did, but
Schuster did, definitely.
Schuster had a management record. He is not designing or building things. He managed the process.
Educational background was engineering, though.
Right. He had experience managing other people who were doing the work. That's the difference. Whereas Ike was actually the inventor, in contrast. With respect to the changes in interrogatory answers and so on, we supplemented as we learned information during the case. And I don't think any of the changes in interrogatories are not changes. They weren't changes. They were additions. Are inconsistent with what we just argued here or in our briefs. A couple additional points that they raised in their reply brief that I'd like to address. First of all, there were a couple of individuals, Biernet and Birkwald, who were looking. They make something of this in their brief for other jobs within Lucent. And they were successful and found them. Mr. Schuster had that exact same option, and he didn't pursue it. He didn't look for a job at Lucent, and the record is he didn't look for a job at all after leaving Lucent.
Your opponent argued that not only were they looking, but they were solicited almost to stay at Lucent, that there was a reaching out to them. Was there any such reaching out to Mr. Schuster?
There was a reaching out. There's no evidence in the record on that. And with respect to the two individuals, Birkwald and Biernet, it was Birkwald, I believe, he was referring to.
Right.
And the reaching out had to do with her having an ombudsman function within the shrunken universe. There wasn't a reaching out to create another job. They weren't making the universe bigger.
But they were saying, please stay. You know, we would really like it if you stayed. And they never said that to Mr. Schuster.
They believed they did not need somebody at Mr. Schuster's level, yes. We think that the dispute that's been raised by the plaintiff is not one from which a jury could draw an age discrimination inference. It is the reasons provided by Lucent were that they were downsizing, his job was being eliminated, and during the course of litigation, Mr. Cogswell was pressed about how he felt about Schuster, and he was able to identify some deficiencies. But that doesn't mean... That doesn't mean he was fired for that reason. We've never said he was fired for his deficiencies. It's consistent that he had some deficiencies, and yet he was being downsized. And the overall reason for his being downsized was the shrinking universe. Again, there were 15 people who lost their jobs with this small venture in the first FNP. There were five more, leaving a total of 34. And management just determined there were too many managers in this, too many process people in this small group, and they didn't need someone at Schuster's level. And based upon the arguments we've made, Your Honors, we'd ask you to affirm, and we say there's no basis here to send the case to a jury.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. Last case for argument, United States.